Okay. So I guess as I must have mentioned sometime in the beginning of the semester, participation credit is all about just showing up on the day before Thanksgiving. So everybody who's here got the participation credit. The people who are listening to me on this and who didn't show up didn't get it. Thanks for showing up, first of all. As the evening goes on, I guess even fewer people are likely to be showing up for classes. The homework 3 has been returned. Actually, there's somebody else here left. Hemant. Where's Hemant? There you go. The statistics for that, I have them somewhere. I'm going to send you email about the averages, et cetera. But looks like, you know, mostly people have done quite well in answering the questions there. So today I was going to do two topics, as I mentioned last time. One is the imprecise queries, which is sort of a continuation of database information retrieval connections. Yes, sir. You didn't get yours? Oh, what did I do with it? I thought I saw it. I must have given it to somebody else. No, there he is. Is there anybody else who didn't get this? Okay. So the imprecise queries themselves are all about is a continuation of the connections, the problems in the middle of databases and information retrieval. And we talked about two problems, two sample problems, and solutions for them. And then today we're going to talk about the third one, which is that the users may not actually be looking for answers just for the specific query they made, which is sort of more like what happens in information retrieval. So they just give keywords and ask you to show them things which are relevant to that. Okay. The second one hopefully the second topic that I want to talk about is about collection selection or meta search engine. That's really sort of connected to database information retrieval idea, but more at the data integration level. So this is collection integration. So text database integration as against tuple database integration. Okay, so and we'll talk about some of the issues there. And then as I said, next class onwards, we'll be talking about, I think next week, social networks and maybe web services. That's the topic. Any questions? Anything about either these or anything else you said last time or? Okay. So this basically, the idea in why we want to support imprecise queries in databases is, I guess, it's by now, it's not too surprising to you. People who are using databases now are much more of a lay public, not those people who know exactly what they're looking for. So there could either be the case that using a form, you know, interface to a database, you ask for something. You know, you look for a particular selection query, and you're hoping that you would use the answers to that as the basis for browsing, you know, and looking for more answers related to it. In fact, the bank system that we talked about last time, where you consider the, in bank system, we actually focused more on the issue of how to even support keyword queries when the relation is split across multiple tables, because it's been normalized. But the second part of the bank system, which I didn't discuss that much, was it's actually banks is supposed to be browsing and keyword search in databases. Browsing and keyword search in databases. And what they were doing was once they give the answers from the database, normally what they do, so if you remember, there were queries such as Soumya and Sunita, and those are two different author last names. And so they wind up giving tuples relevant to, pieces from various tables that are relevant to these keywords. And not only that, wherever there's a foreign key from one of these tuples to some other tuple, they convert that foreign key into a hyperlink. So that, let me just go back to that and see if I can show you. Okay, so here. So they show you an answer like this. Okay, when you give a query such as how many infinita, the answer would be shown this way, where you can click on each of these and get more tuples that are related directly. Okay, so in essence, so Chakrabarty SD98 is the paper ID. Now if you click on that, you would get to, basically that's a foreign key into other tables. Okay, so you can get the rows from those tables which have, you know, into which this is a foreign key to. It makes sense. Okay, in some sense, the foreign keys are links to some other tuples in living in some other places. So you just use the hyperlinking paradigm to allow the users to browse through these connected tables. Okay, it's a reasonable thing to do because you no longer are just interested in the answers, you are interested in browsing around those answers. Okay, so that's something that you want to support. But the extra piece that we're doing here is that maybe the original query is just the start of what, you know, you're not even sure what your original, whether your original query, I mean, it's possible that the answers that don't correspond to this query are also answers that that you would consider relevant, okay? And that would be because you have no, I mean, because your query was not meant to be a strict one, in essence. So the imprecise query essentially means give me also tuples that may not actually connect, you know, completely satisfy all the constraints in the query. Okay. Now there are variety of problems related to this, even in traditional databases. For example, sometimes I might write an SQL query, a large SQL query, where there are enough constraints that there are no tuples satisfying this query. Okay, this has been called the empty query problem. The empty query problem is I just gave way too specific a query, either because I made a syntactic error in writing my, an error in writing my query, or because I was being too greedy and I wanted, you know, too many conditions to be satisfied by a tuple, and there were none of those conditions are being satisfied by the tuple. Okay, so the empty query problem is actually connected to this problem too, where again, I give a query and, you know, I don't want the database to come back and tell me no answers. I want to say, well, there are no answers for the query you wanted. However, if you were to relax the query this way, there are these answers. If you were to relax the query this way, there are these answers. Okay, the question then is, what's the right order to relax? What's the right way to relax a query, you know, that's empty currently? Okay, and that's sort of similar to the imprecise queries, which is, suppose I already have, so here is a query, give me, this is again used car database, and remember I actually from the beginning motivated information retrieval in terms of a used car salesman. You know, you go there, look at one particular car, and they are going to try and sell you other cars based on what they think, you know, based on that, you know, cars that you are buying. They would have to quickly make a, you know, user model and say what are the other cars that I want to get rid of that I can actually sell to this guy. Okay, so that's sort of IR thing. And so we are in fact actually going to use a used car database as the background example for this discussion. So there's a query here, you know, give me all the cars which are made by Toyota, model is Camry, and the price is less than $7,000. Okay, now there may be, if there are no tuples at all to this query, okay, then we are in a kind of an empty query kind of a scenario. What we are talking about is not so much that there are no tuples, but there may be tuples that satisfy this query, but there may also be other tuples that just fail to satisfy the query, but that may be almost closely relevant to the user. So for example, the obvious thing is if I say less than or equal to 7,000, I'm sure you guys will agree with me that $7,002, you know, that tuple should be shown. Okay, what you may not agree with me is if this guy is interested in Toyota Camry, maybe they would also be interested in a good deal on Honda Accord. Actually, you'll agree, but you know, you only agree because you've spent some time thinking about cars and you have this model in your mind that people, you know, Toyota Camry and Honda Accord are essentially functionally equivalent. I mean, people who, you know, try to buy one of these might try to buy the other one, okay? So Now, by what stretch of imagination is Honda Accord equal to Toyota Camry? And is this a piece of knowledge that's given to the database beforehand, or is this something that it should figure out and start showing you answers about Honda Accords too, even though you asked a query about Toyota Camry? Okay, so those are the issues involved in imprecise query answering. Now, there is one other point I want to make, which is between empty query and imprecise query. In the case of empty query problem, most of the time people are interested in making the smallest syntactic change to the query such that some tuples will start coming back as answers. Do you understand what I'm saying? So now what we are interested in this, in imprecise queries, at least our real hope is you want to give tuples in the order of relevance to the user. So in fact, it should even be possible that even if you asked for Toyota Camry 7000, you should allow the system. I mean, a good imprecise query processor might even say that here is this really good deal on Honda Accord, so I'm going to show you that first. So an answer which is not actually satisfying your query would be shown first, and then I will show you a beat up Toyota Camry less than $7,000 lower down. Okay, so when we look at imprecise queries, we are talking about relevance as measured by who. I mean, just as relevance in the information retrieval situation, where ultimately relevance is what you have a model as to what the user would consider relevant, and the only way you can check whether you got it right or not is to do precision recall studies with respect to actual users. Okay, so this is the imprecise query problem. So here is a solution. I mean, actually, there have been closed problems such as empty query problems that are connected to it. And there also people have looked at imprecise queries of this type in traditional database literature. Oftentimes, the answers for that, one type of solution is to actually provide domain-specific knowledge. So in addition to there being a database, you would provide what you and I know, which is, Honda is sort of close to Toyota, and Accord is sort of close to Camry. Okay, now this is very much a domain-specific thing. It's only true for that particular data set. So it's like if on the other hand, you're talking about database papers, you should be able to say that if you're looking for the following paper on deductive databases by Ullman, well, you may actually want to read this other deductive database paper by Raghu Ramakrishnan, who is another guy who did work in this area. And, they have oftentimes very similar, I mean, they have looked at the same sorts of problems. Okay, now Raghu Ramakrishnan is by no stretch of imagination approximately equal to Jeff Ullman, either in size or shape. Okay, but for that particular domain, they are actually connected. Okay, now, to support this sort of imprecise query answering, one thing you can do is you can actually put this extra information about the domain as input to the system. Okay, those kinds of things have been tried. The other thing, of course, is to say, given a query, I mean, you can talk about this also connected to distance between tuples. Okay, so suppose I give you two tuples. And if there is a way in which you can tell me how far are these tuples, okay? And the way you decide that distance is connected to your application. So in terms of used car records, how far are these two used car tuples? In terms of deductive database papers, how far are these two deductive database paper records? Okay, so this sort of, now the point is that would be like describing the distance between tuples. And once again, you need to be, to get a good measure of the distance, which is relevant, which would wind up being affecting the user relevance metrics, you would need to be domain specific. So for example, certain aspects of a tuple, certain attributes of a tuple might have higher weight in in the way you compute the distance between two tuples than other aspects. Okay? So that's the other type of work that people have done. where they will provide domain-specific weights for each of the attributes in the database schema. And they'll say, here is the way you compute the distance between a tuple and another tuple using this domain-specific weight. Now, once I do that, I can always rank my tuples. You know, one of the things about imprecise queries is in this notion of ranking. You know, it just comes out of the box. Okay, as I said, it's not like all the answers that exactly satisfy the query are ranked higher than all the answers that don't. Because I, after all, told you that an example where you may want to show an accord as the first answer, even though the query is about Corolla, about Cambridge. Okay. So again, to do the ranking between tuples in the databases, you may want to actually provide domain-specific distance measures. This has been also done. Okay. And what we'll talk about today, mostly because this piece of work was done in my group and I'm more aware of it, is this an idea where you would try not to require domain-specific information from anybody. Okay, you're trying to see how far you can get by in answering imprecise queries without requesting any extra information about the data from experts. Okay, so here is a solution. I would not make too much. I wouldn't say this is the only solution for this problem. I think looking at this solution, you get at least you'll get an idea as to what sort of problems are involved and you know what is a potential solution. That's sort of true for everything I did in DBIR. Okay, banks, I brought up one solution for a specific kind of problem, keyword search. Okay, and so and then the soft joins, I talked about one specific type of solution. And so here is the same thing too. Okay, so here is the idea of a particular system that you know a student from ASU, Ullas Nambiar, who is now graduated, did this. What his idea is basically, first get all the tuples. You know, let's start by assuming for now, for the rest of the for part of the discussion, that the original query is not empty. Okay, so you run the query on the database, and get all the tuples that are satisfying that particular. Get all the tuples that that database actually said are the answers to this query. Now the idea would be, so this is your base set of answers. So each of them is a tuple. So if it's a used car, then each answer is a used car tuple. You know, the year, the make, the model, the price, all that stuff. Okay. Now think of answering imprecise queries in terms of the following thing. For each one which is in each tuple which is in the base set, look for other tuples in the original database that are close to this. Okay, now I didn't explain to you what closeness means. That's in fact, if you have domain-specific notions of distance, it can be answered directly. Okay, but this is one way of thinking about it. If these are the answers, okay, then more, if you're looking for more answers than the ones that strictly satisfy my requirement, then look for tuples that are close to these tuples. Okay, and one way of thinking about this would be to say that each of these tuples is an answer to a highly specific selection query. So for example, I think if I can show you this. Okay, so if I had my query, give me a model, give me cars which has a model Camry and price 10,000. Okay. Then I'm basically converting it into a precise, an actual direct query, which is all the cars which are actually Camry and which have priced 10,000. And then I got some answers here. Okay. Now I can think of these as very specific selection queries. Right? And a selection query can essentially say, give me all the cars which have make Toyota, model Camry, price 10K, year 2000. That's one query. The second query is make Toyota, model Camry, price 10K, year 2001. And in trying to figure out what are the other tuples close to this tuple, I can think of this as an idea of relaxing these highly specific selection queries. Okay, remember that if I give you domain-specific information, about how to compute the cost, distance between two tuples. And if you also have access to all the tuples in front of you, then you can just do direct distance computation. The model here is more similar to the ones that we have deal with, where the database is sitting somewhere, and all your access to your database is through queries. You don't have access to the internals of the database. Okay, so if you want to get tuples that are close to an existing tuple, then you may want to actually provide one way is to start thinking of these as selection queries and relax them. Okay, so now I converted imprecise query problem into a query relaxation problem by a circuitous way. Now, the question, of course, is, do I know how to solve the relaxation problem? I don't, because if I'm trying to relax this specific query, I can always say a selection query is always a binding of all the various attributes. I can write a generalization hierarchy, a query which says give me all cars is the most general query, and then that can be specialized into give me all the cars where make is Toyota on one side, our model is Camry on the other side, price is Tenka on the other side. And then for each of these, I can further specialize it. So you really have a query lattice. Okay? And at some point, multiple specializations later, you got this. Everything above you in this query lattice is a possible relaxation. The real question is, which is the one that you are actually going to ask? Which relaxation would you send? Okay? It's easy enough to see that you don't want to go to give me all the cars relaxation, which is the very top of the query lattice. But beyond that, even just one level above you, there are multiple parents for you, multiple generalizations for you, corresponding to relaxing the binding, making one of these attributes free. And if you were to make one of the attributes free, which would you make free? That's like saying, I understand you like this car, but I have to change one of these attributes. Which would I rather change? Okay, now you can ask the users for it. That's one way. But the other way is try to see if you can find relaxation order between the attributes automatically. Okay, so you want to be able to somehow say that, for example, maybe I should first try to relax price, then try to relax model, and so on. Except whatever method I give you, it better not be too domain dependent. It better not talk about car. It should talk more about database tuples and attributes and so on. Okay? So that's basically this. So given a base set, find tuples from the database similar to the tuples in the base set. That's what we're trying to do. And the challenge is which attribute should be relaxed first. We don't know that. Yes? That's a very good question. I think if you do have domain knowledge for your particular database, there's nothing wrong in using it. I wouldn't say it's wrong, okay? I would still say that there is this, if many a time, for specific databases, you may not have any knowledge. So it's worth figuring out methods about that will give you automatically decide, some of the domain knowledge. If you know that in your domain, this knowledge that's crying out, that's universally accepted. I can't say you shouldn't use it. Makes no sense. I can, however, make one other point, which is in terms of approaches that basically have only query-oriented access to the database, that only require a query-oriented access to the database, versus approaches which require that you change the insides of the database. Okay, I can, for those, depending on your scenario, you might say, most of the internet, most of the databases that are accessible on the web, users don't have ability to change the insights. Okay. That's a very good question. Let me complete this way of figuring out some of the knowledge that you can compute. And the other interesting thing is, oftentimes you may not necessarily have a single universally accepted importance of attributes. Different users have different importance of attributes. So really, even though this particular lecture today, I'm mostly going to concentrate on user-independent but data-dependent notions of how things are connected to each other. That's what I'll talk about today. But if I get a chance, I'll probably talk about how you could also use user-dependent notions of similarity. Okay, I mean, how would you, for example, get a profile of the user and figure out automatically that this user population seems to like, based on their way of giving queries, they seem to have higher importance to these attributes, lower importance to these other attributes. Okay, so both of these are trying to automatically generate things, which if you already have the information for a specific user in front of you, you should be able to use it too. Okay, so anyway, the idea here that we'll try, this is the data-dependent idea. So we basically decide the relaxation order purely based on the data. Okay, not based on the users, but based on the data. And that is to say, relax the least important attribute first, which is easy to say. The only question, of course, is what is the least important attribute? Did you have a question? That's a good point. That is a good point. But again, as I said, user also gave Camry and price. So you should never be showing them an Accord, which is a rock bottom cheap deal, according to what you're saying. So it's, again, my point is, it's like the moment you got out of the confines of give user the answers to the specific query they asked and ask them to get out of our way, which is what database people do. The moment you open the Pandora's box, everything is up for grabs. You can actually have, remember that Netscape can be the answer to a query called browser, even though Netscape's web page doesn't have the word browser anywhere on it, right? Yes, I mean, no, again, by the way, in this case, all I'm going to do is provide a method, which has lots of holes probably, okay, on how you could use data itself as the basis for figuring out some of the connections between the attributes, okay? Now, whether or not this makes sense for a specific domain and a specific user, you can only tell that based on user studies. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, given the vector space similarity idea, you can keep coming back at me and saying, look, your query is this. Suppose I had a document like this, which you would give as the answer. Nobody in their right mind would be interested in that document because it has the keywords and negation of them somewhere, and you're missing that in terms of semantics. So ultimately, what we're trying to do is give a way of getting tuples, and then ultimately you have to actually do precision recall studies on the real user. Okay. And, let me complete this first portion, and then hopefully there are better ideas, and that we can talk more about. Okay. So the way Ulas defines the least important attributes is essentially to say that an important attribute is one whose binding determines the values of many other attributes. Okay? I mean, so again, the notion of importance can be defined in many different ways. Notion of page importance can be defined in many different ways. And I give a definition, the first question you want to ask is that a reasonable? Does it capture at least some notion of importance? Okay, there are at least the notion of backlink-based importance is one notion of page importance. The another is hit rate-based notion of importance. Okay, this page got more hits last week than this other page, so this is more important. That's another notion of importance. So I'm not saying this is the comprehensive notion of importance, but this does capture one of the intuitions that we have, which is in terms of the data, not in terms of the user. Okay, a particular attribute is important if changing its value tends to change other values. Now, notice a humongous assumption being made here, which is somehow that the database tuples are not just random. You're not just putting random values between, you know, for each of the columns in the database. You see what I'm saying? In some sense, you think that if there is a tuple which has these values in these attributes, maybe it will have certain types of values in these attributes. Okay, that again goes back to one of the three big ideas or four big ideas I was talking about, which is web or the databases that you deal with are not randomly generated. They correspond to some reality. Okay, and if there is causation in the reality, you want to capture that. Okay, so the database term, which captures this notion of what attribute values tend to affect what other attribute values, is functional dependencies. Okay, so you could say that this and this and this attribute determine this attribute's value. That's a functional dependency. Right? So if I know the functional dependencies, then I can use that information. And whenever there's a functional dependency saying, X determines Y, and Y determines Z, then X is more important than Y, Y is more important than Z. That's the notion I'm trying to capture. Okay, and so if X is determining Y and you have a choice between relaxing X or Y, okay, you relax Y because that's less important. Its fate is determined by somebody else. Okay, so that's the notion of functional dependencies. Now, obviously, for real databases, I mean, when you're designing a database, you actually talk about actual functional dependencies that exist in the data because of the domains that you're trying to model. Okay? And so in that case, you would make sure, of course, I mean, you know, when you have functional dependencies, you use that in, for example, normalizing the database, you use that in improving the query processing, etc. You already know that notion of functional dependencies. Here, what we are saying is the database is given to you. You don't even know what functional dependencies hold there. And furthermore, you're trying to, based on the tuples in the database, you're trying to capture what might be the functional dependencies. And what I'm going to do is not just talk about functional dependencies, which are, you know, if I say that A and B determine C, attributes A, B, and C are three different attributes of a tuple, okay? And if I have an attribute, a functional dependency saying A and B determine C, and this is my hypothesis, that this is a functional dependency for a database, how do you check if I'm right or wrong? No, so basically remember these are the attributes. We are not talking about the values. So A and B determine C. So if you can show me any two tuples which agree on A and B but disagree on C, you have proved that it's not a functional dependency. If you can't show me such pairs, then it's a functional dependency. Okay? And so you can actually, given a database, you can first of all hypothesize and test functional dependencies, and there are efficient ways of, you know, just computing them. Okay, what we want to do is not just full functional dependencies, but also approximate ones. Okay, the ones where it holds for most tuples, but the exceptions are fewer than the rule. Okay, in the sense, you know, AB is determining C if it's only there are like five or six exceptions over some 10,000 tuples. Okay, and there are ways of actually formalizing the notions of approximate functional dependencies and capturing them, computing them from the databases. I won't discuss the details here. I won't discuss the details here about how to actually mine the functional dependencies, but you can approximately, you can at least see a dumb idea for doing this. Okay, a dumb idea for doing this is counterexamples. And if there are fewer counterexamples, it's a better functional dependency. If there are too many counterexamples, it's a bad functional dependency. And the algorithms for doing these tend to, they're all counting algorithms, and they tend to do it in such a way that you don't count the same thing multiple times. Okay, so it's sort of like item set mining techniques that you guys may be aware of. Okay, so now there's one other interesting point I want to make about approximate functional dependencies, which we're not going to use it in this particular application, but it's worth making that connection, which is in terms of learning. Okay, if you're trying to learn some relations between different attributes and their values and other attributes and their values, right? How many of you guys have heard of things like association rules? Okay, what's the difference between association rules and functional dependencies? What? Yeah, so another way of thinking about it is the following. Association, a single functional dependency is really giving you direction where you will find association rules. Okay? Think of functional dependencies as a feature selection technique. Okay? And so if you are looking for what attributes having what values would determine what other attributes having what other values, which is what association rules do. Okay, rather than go through the entire database, you could actually start with the functional dependencies. And then that basically tells you that these things tend to determine these things. And so then you look for, now that I know they determine, the question is exactly what formula do they use to determine. That is your classification. That's your association rule or learning classification. Okay. In the learning literature, actually, functional dependencies are called determinations. Okay, so this is the kind of example where you might know something about the domain without knowing the specific values. Okay, and you would then instantiate it. You would then instantiate it in your particular scenario. So to put this as a concrete example, here is a determination. You know common sense wise that normally nationality determines the language spoken in that area. Normally, this is not always the case, it's definitely not the case in Arizona, but normally, and so it's an approximate functional dependency. Okay, nationality determines language being spoken. Now, if you know this, and all of you know this, and you just flew into Sao Paulo airport, okay, and you got down, and the first person who came to you is wearing red shirt, you know, a polka dot pant, and is talking in Portuguese, okay. You can make lots and lots of new hypotheses about your world that you just got in. You can say, well, all the people in Sao Paulo wear red shirts. All the people there wear polka dot pants. All the people in Sao Paulo speak Portuguese. Of these hypotheses, which are the ones you are more likely to make and not be laughed out of the room? The Portuguese one. Why? Because you had a background knowledge which basically said nationality determines language spoken, and you don't yet have, unless you live in a different world, you don't yet have a strong background knowledge saying nationality determines, you know, number of dots on the band. Okay, so it's actually this functional dependencies. If you have the functional dependency in front of you, and you have seen a particular tuple, okay, which has so if I say A and B determines C. And I just now saw a particular tuple where A is 1, B is 2, and C is 3. Now I know, all of a sudden, an actual classification rule saying whenever A is 1 and B is 2, I expect C to be 3. Before, I didn't know. If I just give you functional dependency, you don't know this. But if I give you functional dependency and a tuple, you now know a classification rule. Okay? It's worth keeping that in mind. But anyway, for our purposes, the reasons we are looking at functional dependencies are basically to see what determines what. And ultimately, and I would kind of skip through this slide, basically what you would do is, if you think of each functional dependency as putting links from the ones on the left-hand side to the ones on the right-hand side. Okay. And you have a graph, a directed graph, where these are all the determiners and these are all the determined. Okay? You take a topological sort on this graph. Okay? That will give you importance ordering, essentially. Okay? And the reverse of that, I mean, the one in the end of the topological sort is the least important. Ones at the top are the most important. And starting with that general insight, you can also say, well, if there are, you know, obviously in a topological sort, you might have multiple nodes which are incomparable. They don't cause each other, they don't affect each other, but they wind up affecting others lower down. And if you need to decide ordering between them, you know, there are some ideas that Ullas uses to also order them. But the main thing is this notion of if you are causing somebody's value, then you are more important than them. Okay. Having figured that, so having defined the notion of importance in this way, in terms of AFDs. So notice that the AFDs were picked from the data. We didn't know what actually makes sense for this world. We just looked at the data. We assumed data is a realistic sample of the world. We pick these AFDs from there. We use that to figure out who determines what. Okay. Now, actually, having said this, in fact, I should mention that all we are talking about is mining causal dependencies in the data. AFDs have functional dependencies which make nice sense from a database point of view. But there are many other ways of mining causal dependencies. For example, any of you know Bayesian networks? Bayesian networks are normally best written in the causal direction. So, in essence, if I can mine the best, the topology of the best Bayesian network that captures the data deletion, that would give me the causal dependencies too. I just use AFDs because that's good enough for us. I mean, that's, you know, that's one that we use. Okay. Now, having done this, so the basic idea is that you actually figured out the order in which to relax, and I think there's just one piece that I wanted to show you. Just to give you an idea, in this case, actually, I think Ullas used actual tuples, actual used cars listed for sale on Yahoo Autos, which is a database, Yahoo Autos, and then he applied his functional AFD mining to the tuples there. And then he figured out based on just his thing that, I mean, actually I forgot the example, but the kind of idea he got was the order that he picked was price, model, year, make. Okay. And so if you are picking one attribute to relax, you would first relax price, then model, then year, then make. Okay. And if you are picking two attributes to relax, then he'll essentially start taking self-Cartesian product of this. I don't actually think he ever did two attribute relaxation at the same time. Now, one idea is, one question that we still have is, having sent these are basically telling you what new queries to send to the database, apart from the original query, which gave me the base set. Okay? Having done this, my second question is, now it gave me tuples back. So, what is the order to show these tuples? Okay, and one obvious idea would be to show all the tuples for the original query up front, then show all the tuples for query K, which is the next best in terms of importance, next, and so on. That's one idea. Okay, what he actually wound up doing was at this place he picked another notion of distance between tuples. Okay. So to do the distance, so the idea would be that he would assume still that the base set is the most important tuple. And then he would list the rest of the tuples in terms of their distance from the base set tuple. To talk about the distance from the base set tuples, you have to essentially, so each tuple is a vector. And you need to talk about, you know, distance between two values in each dimension. Okay? Now this is where if you have domain specific information saying this attribute is more important, this attribute is less important. So Accord minus Camry is what is the distance. Okay, and you know, some other make minus some other make, what's the distance between them? Okay. So what he did was another thing which is kind of interesting, basically in the sense that it again says that try to look for patterns that come from the aggregation of all the tuples. Okay, so the idea would be to do this, in essence, you would need to know what values are similar to what values. So you need to be able to automatically detect the fact that Eckerd is somehow closer to Camry, okay, and farther away from some other car. Okay. Now the question is, can you do it? I have really no belief that an actual database instance, a random database instance, would have these sorts of relations implicitly built in. But to the extent the databases are not random and they are actually made by specific people who are actually interested in selling cars, okay, it would be worth figuring out whether you can find some value distances. And what we'll do is something very simple, and then you can see whether it makes sense or not. Okay, so here is my idea: to see what is the distance between Toyota and Accord, or what's the distance between Accord and Camry, let's say. What I would do is, to my original database, my sample of my original database, I will send a query selecting just Accord. It's a selection query on just model being equal to Accord. I get a bunch of tuples. That's the answer set for that. And then I also send another query saying model equal to Camry. I'll get another answer set. Now I need to compute the similarity between these answer sets. Now when you have these answer sets and you want to compute similarity, you can talk about set-based similarity. And you can also talk about some of the crazy things that we did, bag models of similarity. Okay. So in fact, what Ulas does is he takes the answer set for Accord, lines them all up, makes a bag for each of the attributes. Okay. So you only have one tuple now for Accord. It's called a super tuple, where the model value is always Accord, so you won't talk about the model value. And the year value would be a list of 1920, 1949, 1995, whichever of the actual year values they had. And the make values is a set, and the price values is a set. Basically bags, not sets. Okay. Now you apply bag similarity between these bags. And the only one other question is, so if I have two vectors of bags, I now have two vectors of bags. So individual coefficients, I can compute their similarity using bag similarity matrix, such as Jacquard. Okay. And then I need to combine the similarity over all the dimensions. I can just do either linear combination, or I can try to learn the importance of the dimensions again. Now I do know the importance of the dimensions from a notion of importance of the dimensions from the AFD thing. So what he winds up doing is he takes the weights from that AFD idea, he takes the similarities from these bag similarities, combines them. Now why should it make sense? I have no clue. Okay, it's a reasonable way of, it's almost bringing the kind of madness that information retrieval does in terms of trying to pick, documents that are similar to a query. Okay. And what's interesting, I guess, is he did show the kinds of examples that he has. You know, again, on his database, he gets for the value of the make, for this is a make, right? So the values for make are similar to each other in this way. So the make equal to Ford is 0.25 similar to make equal to Chevrolet, and it's 0.11 similar to make equal to Nissan. What? Yes. What? That's another way. No. I think, again, actually, in fact, this is just one specific. You know, one of the things is that's different about this lecture is I'm looking at one specific technique and discussing it end to end. Okay. You can take each of the pieces and either strengthen it with other techniques, such as user models, such as collaborative techniques. Okay. That's all completely open. Okay. Obviously, I'm biased towards this because I had to keep reading versions of this paper until very recently. So I thought I might as well teach you about that. Okay. But you know, given that it's something that I'm involved in, you shouldn't take my words too seriously. Okay, this is just, all you can take is that this is a way, and there are multiple ways of improving each of the steps. Okay. And then, you know, there is a paper that's coming out in ICDE next year. He also does, I mean, in any of these things, you have to do actual user studies. Because, you know, you have no real clue as to whether, you know, you combine apples times, alpha times apples plus beta times oranges divided by gamma times fruit for color or something, and you're hoping for meaning to emerge out of this. And so you need precision recall studies. And the only cute thing I can tell you is he used graduate students to do the evaluation study, and he said graduate students are experts on used cars. And so I think that may well be the reason why his paper got accepted, you know, just for the cuteness value of that statement. But anyway, so there is information on the actual evaluation of this technique, etc., in the paper that you can look at. Okay. One other thing that, you know, just because it came up earlier, one other idea that Ullas originally tried before he came to this particular technique that I described here. This technique that I described here is way too data dependent. It almost ignores the user. Okay? And there was another technique that he tried earlier, which I didn't discuss here, which was completely user dependent. And it was user dependent in the following sense. What he would do is he would keep a log of the queries that the users have asked. Okay, and when a new user asks a query, then the idea would be to find the closest set of queries to this query, and then ask them too. And in fact, and of course, there's this issue of, if I just give you a new query, how do you know what it is closest to in your query set? Okay, this was the same chicken and egg problem that we had to deal with in the attribute value hierarchy idea. You know, if I give a new query, how do I know which query class does it belong to? Okay, there are some interesting ideas he tries. In particular, what he tried in his case was, he would actually call this query, get the answer set for this query from the original database, and then all the old queries that are stored, they also have their answer sets. And he has a similarity computation, online similarity computation with this going on. Okay? And he did an evaluation of this in the context of computer science paper. So people would ask, a particular query about, let's say, Ullman data mining. And then he would not only show the papers which are written by Ullman and have the word data mining somewhere in them, but also show answers to other queries which have been deemed by him to be similar to the answers to this query. Now, this is pretty much what actually happens when something like Google says similar pages. You don't actually know what they do, but you know, these are some of the reasonable things you can do. If based on the answers to your original query, if you like one specific answer to your original query, then you are likely to like other answers that are close to those answers. That was the whole point of similar pages, right? Whenever, you know, for each answer that Google shows, there is a separate similar pages link. So if you like this answer, then you would also like these other answers. Now, they never put them up front. They say, if you really like this, you would like these too. So you take answers that user likes as representative of what they might actually be looking for. Okay. So he tried that, and in fact, that's much more user-specific way of, that's slightly more user-dependent way of figuring out what other queries answers would the user be interested in, given this. And, you know, ideally, I think what we need is something that's dependent on the users, dependent on the notions of this collaborative filtering kinds of ideas, and also dependent on the data specificity. Now, that's what we are doing in web ranking. You know, you do something which is dependent on the content, which is dependent on the hit rate, as well as on the page rank. Okay. Any questions? Any other points on that? So, the other thing that actually is like a short discussion I want to do to you before we end today is this different issue of collection selection and meta search. Okay. only because it's so easy to explain given all that you already know, and then so you will feel as if you know one more thing. Not that you're desperate to know one more thing, but you know one more main, you know, interesting topic you would already know based on what you all, you know, what you figured out. Okay, so this is the issue of either meta search, which is something like Dogpile, where it takes your query and calls multiple other search engines, and you know, basically collects their answers and shows them to you. Okay, that's meta search. Okay, and a related problem is collection selection, where you don't care about the underlying things being search engines necessarily. You just assume that the underlying things are databases, text databases. Okay, rather than ask an, you know, question to each separate database, you have a question, and then it sort of has to be sent to all the databases, all the relevant databases, and the answers from it have to be collated and given it to you. Now, at this level of description, it looks extremely similar to the whole notion of data aggregation, except this is text data aggregation, because what you have are not database tuples but documents. Answers are, each answer is not a tuple, each answer is a text document. Okay, so it really is like, instead of having one single centralized database on which you do, let's say, vector space ranking and figure out what are the ranked results, you know, different databases have some of the pages with them. So the question is, what is the efficient way to do search in this scenario? You know, what is the efficient way to have single point search? You know, you give keywords to one single mediator, and then it basically decides which databases to call. Okay, now I should mention that Dogpile, as far as I can tell, things like Dogpile, and especially the original one, which made meta search a popular term, is this meta crawler, which, you know, would call multiple search engines. And they don't do anything smart at all. Okay, what they do is they call all the search engines. All of the search engines are called, and then all they do is they do quick duplicate elimination. That's it. Nothing. I mean, so it's like less than a 3-10 project. But they became, you know, at that right time, you know, it was an interesting tool. I wouldn't be surprised if Dogpile also does the same thing, because Dogpile really only has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 search engines that it is mediating over. So if you only have 5 search engines, just call all 5. And, you know, unless they blacklist you, just call all 5. Okay? So really, in terms of the reason I bring this problem up is with the hope that you have either multiple search engines or multiple databases that you have access to. And the naive idea of calling all databases isn't going to work. In the, it will work, but it's like basically the same source selection issue that we were talking about in Big Finder type of scenario. If you call everybody, whether they're relevant or not, you're basically A, accessing. I mean, there's an access cost, there's a transmission cost, and there's a local processing cost in terms of eliminating duplicates, you know, re-ranking things and so on. Okay? So there is something to be said for not asking stupid questions and only calling the databases that are actually likely to be relevant to you. Okay, so the specific problems in the collection selection are, in a, I mean, which is either for meta search or for text databases, I kind of treat them similarly, is first you want to be able to select the database, the specific set of databases you'll select. This is like source selection. So if I'm going to only call K sources, or K databases, which K databases will I call? Okay, this stuff that I'm discussing here is to data aggregation what IR is to databases. Okay, so IR and databases work on, IR works directly on single text documents at a time, databases work on single tuples at a time, data integration works on databases which work on tuples, okay, collection selection works on text databases which work on documents. Okay, so that's basically the level, and so obviously you will expect a lot more of things that you know from data aggregation come over here. Okay. So you have to pick the databases, and having picked the databases, normal idea would be that you call them in that order, okay, and then you need to merge the doc results. One of the tricky issues actually is that suppose, you know, I picked document D1, D2, D3, I'm sorry, the database D1, D2, D3, and database D1 gave top 10 results, D2 gave top 10 results, D3 gave top 10 results. My actual question is the following. Think about what is the ground truth that you're, I mean, what's the holy grail in this kind of collection selection algorithm? When should you be really happy? No, okay, here's the idea. Suppose instead of having all these databases, this is an actually important point, and make sure you understand it. So I now have all these separate databases, and I get to pick some of them and send my query, and I'll get the answers, and somehow I will have to collate them and make my top 10 page to my user. Okay. I would say I have succeeded if there was, if in fact I compare my performance, my top 10 page to the top 10 page that would have been generated by an Oracle which had access to the union of all these databases. Think of a super database which has the entire set of documents in front of it. And that Oracle is using the same similarity measure that I am using between query and document. Because if the Oracle knows a better similarity measure than vector similarity, I can use it too. Okay? Keeping the similarity measure the same, whatever is the best that, you know, Oracle and you agree on. Okay? Now, Oracle would basically apply that similarity measure to the super database and pick the top 10 results and show it to the user. Collection selection system has to get as close to that original top, that top 10 as it can. Okay, now you can start seeing the problem. It's possible that if I have to call three databases, it has to be D1, D4, and D7. But then D1 gives results 1 to 10, of which probably only the result 1 and 4 are actually in the top 10, in the original, in the real top 10. Okay, and then the second one has all the results, I mean, its numbers 5, 6, 7 in it are the actual 5, 6, 7 in the final document. So you have three top 10 results and you need to interleave them correctly such that you would get the real top 10. You understand? So that's the second problem. This is called the, this is the database selector and this is the document selector. This is the one I'm saying, I think. So result merging. If you get documents from multiple databases that you have selected, you need to merge the results such that you get them ranked in the right order. Okay, it's a tricky problem, okay? Because if you put them all in the central database, so it's like saying who is the richest person in the world, and I don't know the numbers corresponding to the money. All I know is, you know, I want to find the top 10 rich people in the world. And it turns out that I can only ask each country has a representative. The numbers are, you know, secret. And so each country has a representative which will tell me, this is our top 10 list. This is our top 10 list. Okay? So US will give me the top 10 rich people in US. And let's say some other country will give me top 10 rich people in their country. So first thing I'll decide upfront based on things like GDP, which three countries am I going to call? So I'll decide US and maybe some other country and some other country. Okay? Now each of them will give me their top 10 rich people. Without knowing the actual money that each of these guys are making, which is like the relevance issue, I need to make the real top 10 for the world based on these three top 10 lists. Okay? It could be that only one result comes from the country 3 and the first 8 results come from US and one result comes from country 2 and the other result comes from country 3. It's possible. Okay? So that's why this is a tricky problem. And what I'm going to actually talk mostly about is, so I want to actually get you to understand the problems involved in doing collection selection. And then I'll spend some time in talking about how you could actually pick a collection, pick top K collections. I would not talk about these two problems, okay? But you can go and read the paper that I'll put up on web. Now the way you would select, you know, I like my example that I just made up. You know, the way you would select which documents you would pick, I mean, which databases you would pick, you know, which top three databases you would pick is like asking of the 145 countries in the world, which three countries' representatives are you going to ask for their rich people list? Okay, without being particularly mean to any country. I would say certain countries probably are not worth asking, and certain other countries are more likely should be asked because of just aggregate measures such as GDP. Okay, so I want to ask, given a query, a keyword query, upfront based on the keyword query, which databases are likely to give me most relevant answers to this, and then I'll call them. Okay, now how do I do this? Basically, what I have to do is have a representative for each of the databases. Okay, so for example, if all my queries are about who are the rich people, then GDP is a great aggregate measure of each of the countries. That's a good one. Okay, but GDP is not alone the important one. It also helps to know the variance in the in the distribution of income. It's possible that there are countries which have close GDPs, but one has high variance in the distribution, so they likely have more rich people than the one where everybody has the same amount of money. So this, based on the order of, in terms of first order, you can just look at something like GDP. Second order, you'll start looking at GDP and variance. And similarly, here too, you could look at representatives of the various collections. Okay. And there have been variety of methods that have been developed as to what would you see as the representative for each database. One general idea, there are two general ideas I'll talk to you about. One is this idea that is used by Cori, which is a very popular collection selection engine. And what it does is it basically, in fact, all of them, both the approaches I will use wind up doing this step as the first step, which is get a sampling of documents from each of the databases. Get a sampling of documents from each of the databases. And the more random, the more uniform, more representative your sample is, the more uniform your sample is with respect to the database, the more likely that it will actually represent the database's characteristics. Okay, and so there is actually a whole area about how would you, if you don't have access to the entire database in front of you, and all you can do is ask it questions, how would you generate an unbiased random sample of the database? It's not an easy question. Okay, just asking 15 questions and taking those tuples is not going to cut it. Okay, getting a random sample isn't easy. But that's why I just put this as a separate slide, but I won't go into the details, other than saying that getting a random sample only by asking questions to a database is not easy. But assume that you figured that out one way or other. Then, so database one has, a bag of documents. Database two has a bag of documents. Database three has a bag of documents. These are the representatives now. So what do you do with this? One idea is it's a bag of documents. Just remove the cover sheets for the documents so that it will become a bag of words. So each bag of documents becomes its actual bag. Okay? So now I have a super document corresponding to database 1, super document corresponding to database 2, super document corresponding to database 3. These super documents are actually documents. You take your query, do a vector similarity to these super documents, find which is the one that is most similar to the query. That is the most relevant database. Second most similar is the second most relevant database. Third most similar is the third most relevant database. This you can understand, even though it's late and it's Thanksgiving. Okay. All I said is get a bunch of files from each of the databases by probing them, okay, and then take these databases. Take these files and just pour all the words into a bag for each database. So you have one bag for each database. A bag is a document in our bag model. So each database is now represented by a single file. And you first take the similarity between your keyword query and the single file, on each of these files. And whichever has the highest similarity, that's the document you call first, next the second one, next the third one. Okay, Now, that's sort of like, let's assume that that's like just taking GDP, you know, of the country without taking the variance in income. The second idea is essentially going to use the same representatives, but it won't combine it all into a single file for each. What it does instead, this idea called REGDE, what it does is it keeps for each database, it keeps, here is a mini collection now for this database. And here is a mini collection, here is a mini collection. I'll ask the query to these mini collections directly. Unlike the real databases, the mini collections are in front of me, so I can actually see how many high similarity answers are present in each of the mini collections. Use that information to decide which has the most number of relevant answers, which has the second most number of relevant answers, which has the third most number of relevant answers. Furthermore, it's also actually one of the other interesting things is if the mini collection is like a 5% sample of your database, and it gives me 10 results. So in the 5% sample, I have 10 results, then I can scale up and expect how many relevant results I'm expected to have in the entire database. Okay, so I use the size also to figure out how many expected relevant results I will get from each of the collections. And use that to rank the collection. And it turns out that if the sizes are the same for all the databases, both approaches more or less work the same way. If the sizes differ and the distribution of relevant documents differs, second approach works way better than the first one. The only good thing is both were written by the same guy. So at least he doesn't have to feel too bad. Okay? And then one last thing which I won't describe, but I'll just make you think about is you could have overlapping documents between databases. We spent a lot of time talking about overlapping tuples between databases, so we can have overlapping documents between databases. How do you handle that? Okay, think about this. I'll send you a link to another paper we just wrote about how to deal with overlap between databases. But it's, again, everything that you had in the text version of the, in the data version of the data aggregation problem, there's a version of it in the text version of the aggregation problem. Okay? So we'll stop here. Next class, I'll come back and start doing something about social network analysis. Happy Thanksgiving.